Hey, John.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm going well. How are you?
Good. Oh, man.
Are you in Wisconsin? Where am I talking to you?
This is Wisconsin. This is a big conference room is what it is, but there's a horse.
There is a horse in your conference room. Is that a Wisconsin thing or?
It kind of is. I don't really know. It's just this room kind of thing. I contract for a company here in town, and so I'm just here at this space today. So, oh, you play guitar?
Yeah, a little bit. Mostly Rob. Those are Rob's guitars, not mine.
That's awesome.
The piano is mine.
Very cool. I didn't know you guys were musical. I love music. I've been playing since I was like 3. Well, violin and then voice, piano, all that kind of stuff.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Founder. Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
We've shared a meal together, but we don't know each other very well. So it might be helpful if you, for my sake, as well as for our audience, just maybe say a little bit about what you do professionally, what your company is, a little bit of an introduction to who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my name is John Hainstock. I am the co-founder of ZoomShift employee scheduling software. We focus on providing scheduling for small businesses that have part-time employees. So we allow the manager to create the schedules and then employees to be able to pick up shifts, swap shifts, request time off, and all that kind of stuff online. So we've been working on that product for about 4 years now-ish, so about the age of my daughter as well. And it's been a roller coaster, but it's been a lot of fun, and we've learned a lot along the way. So, yeah, I don't know if that tells you enough or if you need
help. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Are you the technical founder, or do you both share the technical and marketing aspects of your startup?
Yeah, we both cover both the technical and the marketing side. And so it wasn't planned out that way. The way my business partner and I met, we were a part of a technology incubator in Wisconsin. And so what happened is I was doing some marketing for that company. And Ben, my co-founder, started his company ZoomShift there. And so the main investor there was a high-frequency trader, and he lost all of his money in grand fashion, and he ended up having to shut down the incubator shortly after it started. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. And so we were sitting next to each other, became friends in the program, and kind of had to figure out our next steps. We were literally the last two people in the building, and we decided to start a digital marketing agency just as a way to kind of pay the bills and try to see if we could self-fund any other startup ideas we might have.
Mm-hmm.
In the background, ZoomShift kind of kept doing its thing as a software as a service company. It just kind of continued to grow, mostly just through search. And so it got to a point where we had to come back and decide what we wanted to do with it. And so we were already partnering on the agency side, which we called Tailwind Creative, and we decided to come back and focus on it more. And so that was probably 3 years ago now. And then we went 50-50 and yeah, kind of went from there. But yeah, to answer your question, I guess I didn't really answer your question very well. We both wear like a lot of the same hats.
So you're coming to this field with both the technical experience and then the marketing business piece.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
So one of the reasons that we're talking, of course, is you recently wrote an article that was published on Medium, and the title was, "Hi, my name is John. I'm recovering from startup attachment disorder," which of course caught my interest. And in the article, you mention many of the challenges that you've had in kind of the emotional side of doing this work. So your article describes you feeling anger and frustration, anxiety, depression, loneliness, hopelessness. And I think that you're right on in the article that these are experiences that many people in the startup space experience at one point or another in their career. So I wondered maybe if you would just begin by talking a little bit about what the emotional roller coaster has been like for you as you've been running Zoom Shift for the last 4 years and going through the ups and downs of that, and how that's affected your internal world, your emotional life.
Yeah, definitely. So I think the conversation around emotional health within startups is lacking. There was an article recently on Medium. I can't remember who it was by, but he was just talking a little bit about bringing awareness and exposure to the whole concept of emotional health. It was something that I didn't think about at all when we first started the company. I was just thinking, like, how do we make money for the next month, which was stressful, but it was more just kind of this new exciting challenge in the beginning phases. You're just kind of trying to figure it out. You're kind of in almost a honeymoon phase, I would consider it, if you look at it like a relationship. And so in that beginning stage, call it the first 6 months to a year, we were just kind of grinding through, figuring out what kind of a business we wanted to be, who we were as a company, and weren't really paying attention to our emotional health that much. I think we just kind of like, we never really talked about that kind of side. Sure, things were frustrating, but it was more just dealing with clients or money and stuff like that.
In the early phase, it seems like there's a lot of problems to solve. And so it's problem, solution, problem, effort. And yes, there's not this need to or motivation to sort of step back and look at the meta level. How are you doing? You're like, I'm just solving problems and paying bills.
Exactly.
So at what point did that shift for you?
So honestly, it probably shifted around the time that we went to MicroConf. And so that was about 2 years ago now. And so we started really asking ourselves that question, how are you doing, to each other? And that kind of changed some things. Like it really revealed our heart and our values and where we were kind of headed as a company, because every single day it was different. It would just be like, and actually at certain points in the day, it would be different. So you would go from a conversation being like, this is the best company ever. We want to build this thing, and we want to create a lifestyle business and all this kind of stuff, to we want to sell this thing. We don't want to do it anymore. There's no point. This is not going where we want it to go. And that conversation, I think, is right around the time where I met you. And I remember sitting talking with you. It wasn't like we had any answers or any fruitful like discussion, really. It was just kind of like me venting and being like, I don't really know if I want to do this anymore. I don't even know what I'm doing here. So I think from that point on, we really started being more conscious about our emotional health. I won't even say it's gotten that much better, but I will say that we've been able to at least identify where we've both been at emotionally and be able to be a better ear to each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's funny. I actually vividly remember our lunch conversation, and there's lots of meals at MicroConf, and I've been going for a couple of years. So, I mean, I think we were at the table, you and your co-founder, with Heat and Shaw and just a couple other people, and there are a couple of conversations happening, and you guys were talking about how you were feeling. And I just remember feeling like quite concerned about you.
Yeah, I think you actually said something.
Yeah, I think I probably said, well, I'm really worried about you.
Yeah, I'm really worried about where you guys are at. We were worried too. Yeah. Yeah. So, and that feeling, honestly, so it didn't really go away. And I think it wasn't until a few months ago that I started piecing all these things together and trying to put it down in words, what it really was I was like feeling. Because honestly, my business partner and I, we would spend hours talking back and forth and talking in circles, like, about how you're feeling and just like kind of processing everything that you're going through. So the big concern for us was always like, how are we going to grow this thing? Where are we, you know, like, where are we going with this thing? Like, it doesn't seem like the more time we invest, like, it necessarily like pans out, but yet we're both still working like a crazy amount of hours, and we're distant from our families and all this kind of stuff. And just kind of having those conversations consistently of like, oh, well, nobody else gets it. Nobody else understands, because we're just kind of, we're grinding away, and like nobody gets like really what we're trying to do. When in reality, I think people probably can understand if like you're willing to share a little bit and just open up to people. I mean, my wife definitely can.
I think that's a really important point, because I do think that people who are experiencing all kinds of different sadness or frustration or loneliness, they do feel isolated. And so that whole line of nobody's going to get this, my spouse isn't a founder, my parents don't understand the pressure I'm under, the people in my community or the people I hang out with at the bar, the people that I go to Bible study with, like, they're not going to understand. And I think that is probably a trick. Like, I don't think that's true. Even if they don't get the ins and out details of every part of your job, everybody knows what it feels like to be afraid. And everybody knows what it feels like to be uncertain about how well you're doing in your life. And everyone knows what it feels like to be sad or unmotivated or feel lost. So if people are listening to this and they have the sense of like, people don't understand, people don't get it, that's not quite true.
Right, exactly. They might not know exactly what you're going through, but they understand the emotional toil of, yeah, kind of like what you're saying, even just all these emotional things that people go through. They have similar feelings, maybe different experiences, for sure.
You in your article mentioned this sense in which your startup had hijacked your life. That was one of the phrases that you used that I thought was pretty powerful. You want to say a little bit about what that means or what that feels like?
Yeah, I think it just takes over every aspect of your life. It almost holds you hostage in a way where you willingly put yourself into this hostage situation where you put it on yourself. I think a lot of it is mostly internal, right? We don't actually work for investors. We're a self-funded company. So most of the toil that we have and the struggle that we have is all internal. It's placed on ourselves, like it's an internal hostage kind of situation. So yeah, I think it just starts taking over really in your thoughts. And that's really where it shapes your relationships with your spouse, with your kids, with your friends, your family, all this stuff. It makes it hard to really connect when you're at places and you know, like, you should be enjoying what's going on, but you can't really because half of your brain is just like in another spot. And so, yeah, it really takes over a lot of things. It takes over, obviously, the work week. So a ton of your time is spent doing that. But the biggest thing for me is probably the mind. It just takes over your mind and kind of consumes that. And there's just this weightiness, this heaviness to it that is always there no matter what you do.
And the sense in which it's controlling you, you're not running it. Like the business becomes this other entity that is aggressive and dominant and sort of, you know, a hijacker, like taking over parts of you that you're like losing control of your own mind and inner self.
Exactly. Yeah. And I wouldn't say it's like one of those things that happens overnight. It's one of those things that's like this slow progression where it's like daily, you kind of just start to let yourself be more and more consumed by it. And if you're not aware of like what is going on, you get to a point where, kind of like I mentioned in the article, you wake, that's what you think about. You sleep, that's what you think about. You're with friends and family, that's what you're thinking about. And then you hit a point where you realize like, this is crazy. Like, this should not be, this is not, I'm not happy from this. This is not making the job any better. This is not making the company go like do any better. This is just craziness. But I think it just happens so slowly that it's like really hard to identify unless you kind of have a sounding board, a business partner or somebody in your life or a counselor or somebody that you can just be talking with. And they just say, how are you doing? Like, answer that question. Like, how are you doing today? Like, emotionally, like, what is going on? Like, how are you feeling about the company, where we're headed? Like, is this what you want to be doing with your life?
Those personal reflection questions, as well as having someone in your life that's really asking big questions about how well you are or not well you are. One of the ways that you talked about kind of how this happened for you is a sense in which there's some misplaced identity. And you give a nod to some pride and narcissism, which I think was very like honest and self-reflective on your part. Because I think, you know, a lot of that is going on for people in this space where they are kind of like, I'm going to be the one who makes it and my company is going to be the one that's awesome and, right, you know, sells and whatever.
Yep.
I mean, that seems like it's the hijacking. The hijacking takes over so much of who you are that you feel like you don't exist separate from your business.
Yeah, for sure. I think the identity was really the source of the problem for me and continues to be, is placing my identity in a startup or a job or something like that is just, I think I said it in the article, but I don't think it can carry the weight of what that means, of the identity that I have. And what I mean by identity, I guess, is your value, your worth, your purpose, like all of those things that kind of define who you are. Your startup is not, like, it doesn't have the shoulders to be able to bear that weight, and it shouldn't. And I think that's a clarification that I didn't really realize, I didn't really see myself placing a ton of my in it. But I think when I started really questioning, like, what would happen if this went away? What would happen if I stripped it out of my life? And I started realizing, like, some of the emotions that I would have with that, like, just a, like almost like a really bad breakup. Just like, it would be terrible for me emotionally because I'm so attached to this thing. It's my baby. It's like my retirement. It's my future. It's all these things. And so I had to kind of see it as more of a privilege that I get to work on, like something I'm currently working on. I heard it talked about in one of the startup chats that Heaton and Stelly did. They were talking about like when to know when to quit or something like that. And they were talking about how, you know, people talking about their startups as their baby and like even their kids as like theirs and like owning their kids. But instead of like thinking of it that like that, thinking of it as, no, this is something that we have the opportunity to influence and shape and hopefully like help leave the world a better place. It's not ours. It's not, it doesn't belong to us. It's a means. It's not like the end. It helps us get to where we want to go. And I think for the longest time for me, like I didn't really know even where I wanted to go. Like I was just like, okay, I'm going to do the startup because startups are kind of cool. And like SaaS is amazing. And I'm going to do this. Like, this is cool. This is a great opportunity. Like, why would I not want to do this? Not thinking like with the end in mind, like, hey, I want to spend a lot of time with my family. This is truly a means to an end. It's not the end goal. And so I think I really had to like re-examine that along the way. Cause I would say that. And I think that's where like the pride, narcissism, ego comes in a little bit more. It's like, I could say that to people, like I'm building this lifestyle company where like, I don't have to work 60 hours a week, you know, and all this kind of stuff. You invest up front and you can enjoy the rewards later. But I wasn't living like that at all. I was treating it differently. And I was like foregoing time with my family and friends to work on this thing that I thought would somehow replace that. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting because your company is a bunch of lines of code and some cool design and some processes. Like, it doesn't have a soul.
No. You know?
It's very much just a thing.
Exactly.
And I think your sort of thought that you took from Heaton and Stelly in the sense in which we tend to kind of maybe minimize the value and complexity of ourselves when we tie ourselves too closely to something that's some lines of code and some cool design.
Yeah.
One of the things that was interesting to me about the way that you've talked about this is the word attachment has a lot of meaning for a psychologist in the sense that we talk a lot about secure attachments and insecure attachments. And attachment is a relationship word. Attachment is a word all about how we measure and observe and think about the quality of relatedness between two human beings. So that was a piece of sort of what I was wondering as I read your story. It's a, as you called it, it's this displaced attachment where you're relating to your startup as if it is a spouse or a friend or a father or a someone else. And I guess I'm wondering a little bit how that's been for your other human attachments.
Yeah, the relationship that it hurts the most is the one with my wife. And so she tends to get the brunt of the emotions that I feel. And honestly, for me as a guy, I think this is, my emotions really come out in one way. It's usually anger or frustration. And so she would kind of see me get bottled up in whatever was going on. And I would kind of just try to downplay the emotions and not really talk about them very much. And so that gets to a point though, where you can't really bottle them up anymore and you kind of lash out and really the dumbest things, they are the dumbest things. And so it's taken a toll on our relationship. There's been times where we've been talking about things and she's like, you know, I just want you to get a regular job and just work. And that's usually in the heat of some sort of argument or discussion around what's been going on with the business. And, but she fully supports everything that we're trying to do and she sees the value in it and she sees kind of the ups and downs of it. And so I think she's the one though that's taken the most, just received the most of the hardship of it. And then second would probably be my daughter June a little bit, just in being disconnected when I'm around her, you know. And my wife will try to remind me more and more, like, hey, just put your phone away. Like, this is dinner time. This is like time to play with her. And I mentioned this in the article too, about just trying to set some boundaries. I work from home most of the time. And so the only boundaries I can actually make for myself is actually to put the device, whether that's a computer or the phone, like in a separate room. Like, that's the only way I can kind of escape from the technology side of things. And so just trying to be more conscious of that and just be more present with her, be more present with my wife. That's probably the hardest thing when you have this other relationship, right?
Yeah. It's kind of a second wife. Rob and I have talked about this. I'm like, so how's your lover on the side drip doing? You know, like,
that's great.
Like, you're distracted. You're not paying attention to me. Like, you're not present. And it has a little bit of that feeling of like, what are you doing? Who are you messing around with?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Up at the late hours of night and you're off like with that other person. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hilarious. She definitely takes the most of it. But I would just say in general, like, it's just like a distant feeling when you're around people. And again, I think it goes back to that feeling like, oh, they don't necessarily get it. And that's also in the back of your mind too. So there's almost like a justification of being distant. Like, hey, you know what? They don't totally understand. It's okay for me to kind of be in my thoughts. This is really important that I figure this out. So yeah, that's been hard, but it's been getting better, I think.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of the strategies that you're implementing to make things better.
Yeah, this is going to be really depressing to somebody listening. I'm sorry.
No, I think you'll probably find a lot of resonance in the people who are listening.
I promise I'm not like a bummer of a guy to be around most of the time. I promise I'm not like that. Yeah, like some of the ways, so I mentioned this before, but removing the devices and then also trying to be present. And what that looks like for me is I've been kind of experimenting more with the concept of quantity time, not replacing quality time, but just really emphasizing the amount of time I spend with my kids and my wife. And so I feel like there's this kind of misconception, and this is like for a totally different topic, but that quality time can kind of replace quantity time. And it's like kind of comes out of this notion of like productivity and life hacks and like all this kind of stuff that I just eat up. Honestly, I love that stuff. Like, how can I make the most out of the, like, this 25 minutes or whatever? And I'm going to do a Pomodoro and then I'm going to do like 15 pushups and whatever. But relationships are so much different than that. And I'm realizing that like, it's really about quantity and quality. And so just creating the space for my wife and I to actually have those discussions that get meaningful, it just takes time. It just doesn't happen. You can't just like manufacture it. So it takes intentional time. So for us, like in this season in life, we have twins. And so everybody's in bed around 8:30. So our time is from like 8:30 till 9 or whenever she crashes, because she's just exhausted. But that's like our time to like spend together, to talk together, to just be together. And we try to make a habit of that daily. And then as well for my kids, it's like dinner time and then play time before they go to bed. And then I put my oldest daughter to bed. And so just like having those like quantity time, right? It's like a time that we have committed to making for each other every single day, as well as we're trying to get back to having a date night weekly. But
now I just want to like totally applaud you, because I have this conversation a lot with folks, and there's a sense in which that, you know, the quality, let's sit down face to face time is really important. But, you know, I can't sit down with my 5-year-old and be like, okay, tell me everything that's extremely important in your inner life and your friendships right now. I've got 1 hour for you, kid, but I'm all yours. And that's not how relationships work, and especially with children, where the most important conversation happens when, he's riding in the car and I'm taking him places. Or the most important conversation happens when we're doing something totally different, but I'm just hanging around. And then he happens to come up and say, is my goldfish going to heaven? You know, we have these like big existential conversations. So yeah, anyway, I think that's a real challenge of the sort of productivity life hacker stuff when we are so focused on streamlining all of our time that we don't allow for this open space time to just be present and hang around with our people that we love the most.
Yeah, exactly. It was something that the real shift in mentality over the last few months. And that's like a topic for a totally different post, but like kind of just the concept of making space for that to happen. And it really only happens if you block out the time. Yeah. So I would say those are the big things for me right now. I'm not like super complicated about it. I don't have a huge plan. It really just comes down to being more conscious about my emotional health. And then also just talking with my business partner and my wife regularly about it. My business partner and I talk like all the time. It's crazy. We talk hours and hours a week, and we only have each other right now. So it's just the two of us working on this. It's been such a great thing. We weren't friends before we started the business, but we became like best friends through this whole thing. And we've just grown over the last 4 years together in a lot of ways. And so it's just been a really good relationship. Not like some of those co-founder nightmares that I heard about a little bit on the podcast before. It's been great. It's just been awesome working with him. So
it sounds like your shift is beginning to implement some practices that remind you that your identity is bigger than the lines of code in your business, that you have a worth and value to your wife, to your children, to your co-founder, to your friends that is beyond your ability to make money or implement your plans for growth with Zoom Shift. And those are, I mean, it's just a really nice way to reframe what's going on in your life. This is something that you do. It's something that is important to you, but ultimately it doesn't define you. And it's not an attachment that's going to love you back. So it's not an attachment to give your whole heart and soul to.
Exactly. Yeah. Or all your time or anything like that. I think it's just kind of looking at it more as an investment, as something that a good means to the end that you're going to get, hopefully, is deeper relationships and a better legacy for your family and the people that you know and the people that you come in touch with. So.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me and, you know, share a little bit about your emotional life and family life. And I will put a link to the article on the show notes so people can find it there. And where's the best way for people to follow you or get in touch with you if they are wanting to?
Probably just via email. So john@zoomshift.com, John with no H, or John Hainstock on Twitter. I'm pretty responsive on those two mediums.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.